Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Chai with Jams podcast, season two. I'm Ritika Agrawal, your host, where I sit down and have a virtual cup of tea with some of the most inspiring and successful individuals from around the world. Join me as I delve into their stories, explore their triumphs and challenges, and discover the ingredients that help brew them success. This season, we're focusing on individuals that are on the rise, that wear multiple hats, and have insights that can help transform your everyday life. Please join me in welcoming our first guest, Neha Joy, Emmy-nominated host, writer, and producer. Hi, Neha. Welcome to the Chai with Jams podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for having me. I know we talked about this for a minute, so it's good to finally be on here.
I am so thrilled. Like I always say, I'm so inspired by your journey. And it's just such an honor for me to be able to host you on season two. So welcome and thank you so much for your time again.
Yeah, no, it's really awesome. And it's really fun to connect with fellow South Asians in the industry too. And I remember when I was first coming up and just wanting to network with everyone and wanting to talk to everyone and you know, see their story and their journey. So it's nice to be able to do that back now.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for doing that. Before we get started, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I am a host and reporter. I started out in sports and then I moved into hard news before landing in what I do now, which is entertainment news. So I do a lot of one-on-one sit-down interviews. I do our daily news videos for The Hollywood Reporter, which is the company that I work for. And I also go to red carpets, and all of it's done on our video platforms, and they sit on our page, on our social media platforms, and all of our syndicated channels. So it's a lot of fun. I feel like I've gotten a taste of a little bit of sports, a little bit of hard news, and I've always wanted to go into entertainment. So I feel really satisfied with where I am now in my career.
That is incredible. That's so exciting. And I can't wait to dive more into it. As you said, you started out in sports. And I know that you've mentioned in a lot of your interviews that I've watched that your first ever gig was as a freshman in college. And that was with New York Mets, which is incredible. What a cool opportunity as an 18-year-old. But I'd like to go a little bit further back. What kind of planted that first seed of getting into hosting, reporting, especially because there hasn't been much representation in the South Asian community? What made you pick broadcast journalism?
Yeah, so I actually, I really wanted to go into acting when I was younger, and I was really involved in the arts in school. So I was doing all the shows, community theater, all of the, you know, all state, all county, all of that, very involved in music and theater. And then it was time to pick a college. So of course, you know, when you rope in your South Asian parents into what you want to do for a living, that's a tough conversation to have. So I remember I said, you know, I don't even know if I actually like had an official, like formal sit down conversation with them. But I remember I was like, I don't think, even as myself, it wasn't just a conversation with my parents, just sitting down with myself saying and thinking, do I want to pursue acting as a career? And that's very risky. And I applaud everyone that has been able to do it and is successful with it. But I really had to think about it. And I realized that that wasn't something that I was willing to go into full time at that point in time. And I was just kind of mulling through some of my other options. And I remember I did the school news in high school, and I really loved it. I remember the kids would do morning announcements and, you know, after school news. So I was a part of both of them through my theater program, and I really liked it. And I think at the end of the day, there are a lot of similarities and overlap that, you know, you find between being an actor and being a journalist. You're both storytellers. And my favorite part about, you know, being an actor, as most actors feel, it's the art of storytelling. And I found that through journalism too. It's sharing other people's stories. It's getting to know other people. It's getting to know the world. And, you know, just like learning more about the world through storytelling. So I really like that aspect of it. And I realized I was good at it, and I went for it. And once I started school, I was lucky enough to book my first job within 6 months of starting college. So I feel like I felt really prepared. And I talk about this a lot of the time where it's, preparation meets opportunity. And I felt very prepared. And the opportunity just happened to strike a lot earlier than I thought it was going to.
I love that. And that is such a nice and interesting trajectory. And it's also very relatable to me as someone who did grow up in India and was influenced by Bollywood and all the entertainment around. I remember in fourth grade, I like made a scrapbook for my mom explaining to her why I wanted to do acting and I wanted to do acting classes. But like you said, it is such a hard conversation to have. And as you grow up, you kind of have to pick a strong, I wouldn't say a stronger, but just a more defined profession because it is a tough conversation in the South Asian community, I guess. So, like you said, it's important to applaud the people that are in the profession because they're doing so, so amazingly well.
Yeah. And I will say, because I do get this question a lot too, where especially from, fellow South Asians, where they're like, how are your parents okay with it? Or, how did you get your parents on board? And the honest answer is they weren't at first. And I know a lot of, South Asian youth and young, like boys and girls are, it's hard for them because they don't have the support of their parents. And they may look at, other people that are successful from our culture and think, well, that can't be me because like I don't have the support of my parents, or that must have been a different storyline for them because they may have had the support. And I'll be the first to tell you, I didn't have that support. They were very against it, and it took them a little bit of time to come around to it. And I think a lot of times that can hold people back, just being like, I don't have that support system. But I went and found that support system within other people. I really stuck on to my siblings. I really had a good support system with my older brother and my older sister, who really, were there to vouch for me and support me in everything that I did. And I had really good friends, and I had really good mentors in school, in both high school and college. And I think if you can build that support system, if it's not from the people that you're looking towards, if you do have another one, and I know that it's hard because it's your parents, and at the end of the day, there are, parents that are very strict and saying, you can't do this in the arts, you can't do that, you have to have a more structured career. But I kind of pushed the buttons a little bit. It was hard. It was really hard at the time. There were times where I'm like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong because I'm, doing this career that they're not necessarily supportive of, but I stuck to it. I stuck to the support system that I had. And they did. They saw that this was something that I was good at. Because at the end of the day, it's not that they just don't want you to do something because they don't want you to do it. It comes from the culture. They're scared. It's a new world out here,
Yes, exactly.
as
It's
first
not the
generation.
standard template. Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary. There's a risk as our parents. They want us to feel secure. They want us to have a bright future. That's why they came to this country.
Yes.
So there was a lot of that involved too. And I understood, once I understood that it didn't come from a malicious place, they were just, truly just wanted the best for me. And that's just the culture that they grew up in. So, once we both kind of came to an understanding, and I was very like adamant that I was passionate about this, and they saw what I did, they really came around to it. And now, now they're one of my like biggest cheerleaders, which is
Of
fun.
course.
So
I'm sure
it's
they're so
always
proud of
funny.
you.
Yeah. So things can change. Time can change and bring people around.
That's so rightly said. It is truly the culture. It's truly the template. And it's something that they've never known or they've only heard of those things. So they always think of, oh, you're an outsider. How are you going to make it? So it's definitely coming from a place of protection. But it's again very nice to see people like you kind of breaking the stereotype and then having our parents kind of support that journey is truly commendable. So I mean, I thank you and I thank your parents for opening more doors for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now, there are more stories where people can share my story and share other people's stories that have done it even before me and say, she didn't necessarily have the support, and this was her journey, and her family and everyone came around to it. And it's a success story in a sense. And hopefully that does motivate, more people
Absolutely.
to pursue the careers that they want to.
Absolutely. Going back to, you getting your first job just 6 months in, how did that happen? How did you land your first job just right into college?
It definitely was right place, right time. So, and it's like, when everything happens for a reason, invisible string theory, all of that stuff, which I totally believe in.
1,000%.
And I remember my brother is a huge baseball fan. Like, we grew up as a baseball family solely because of my brother. And I think it was because he went on a school trip in elementary school or something, and they took him to Shea Stadium to see the Mets play, and he got to meet some of the players. And after that, he was like, "I am the biggest Mets fan ever. I will root for this team through thick and thin." There's a lot of thin, but he stuck through it. And he, would just look up Mets news, be on the blogs, everything. So my freshman year of college, he was randomly on one of the blog posts, and he saw that there was a posting for a position to be a host of one of their shows on their network. And it was a kids show, so they were looking for a kid host. So they were looking for an age range of, I think it was like 14 to 18 or something like that. And at the time, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this would be perfect. So he sent it to me, and he's like, "I think you should go out for this." And I was like, I know baseball. I like baseball, but am I enough?" Which is a little bit of imposter syndrome that kicked in. I'm like, "Do I know enough to host a show? Like, do I have the authority to be able to, tell kids about?" I didn't even really know what this show was about. But I took the chance, and he took me to the city. So me and my brother, we went to the city because we were living on Long Island at the time. And it was January, and it was in the middle of a snowstorm, and we waited online. So it was an open call audition, and there was probably like easily like 100 people there that was waiting to audition. And I'm like, this is such a long shot. There were people there that knew stats. They knew facts and figures since like the 80s about the Mets. And they came in full uniform. They looked so prepared, and I was like, I'm shaking in my boots because I don't know anything. I was like, get me out of here. And I'm like trying to convince. I was like, maybe my brother can like audition instead of me. And he's like, no, like you have to do this. And then they gave us our audition piece, which was just to memorize a script, and then they were going to ask us a series of questions. So I'm like, I'm probably gonna flop the question part. So what can I do? What do I know? Let me see my skill set right now. And I remember my brother was saying, he's like, you're an actor. You performed your whole life. You can memorize scripts. And I remember I was really good at memorizing. I had a very quick memory. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna nail this like monologue that I have to memorize. And it was one of the opening stand-ups that you would have to say if you were hosting the show. So I went in there, and thankfully I had it memorized because that's the one thing that I was like, I know I'm good at this. I could do this. That's all I could count on. And they really liked it. And they asked a series of questions, but it was more so like, what's your favorite thing about the Mets? What's your, who's your favorite player? Things like that. And I remember when they asked, what's your favorite thing about the Mets? There was it's such a funny story, but it is. It's down to character, personality. They were like, "What's your favorite part about the Mets?" And I said, "David Wright," because me and my sister had the biggest crush on David Wright at the time, and he was the star player. And me and my sister had little schoolgirl crushes on him, so I was like, "Oh yeah, David Wright." And the way that I said it, they knew why I said it. And they just started laughing. They were like, "This is hysterical." Like, I think maybe a lot of people brought in a lot of, well-versed knowledge and statistics about the Mets. And I came in here with this very unhinged answer.
Love that.
But I think what they were really looking for was personality, and they were looking for maybe someone that came across as very genuine and was looking to just, have fun and could have fun with this job. Because at the end of the day, it's a show for kids, and it's about getting kids to learn more about the sport, but also have fun with it and learn more about the team and the organization and how it's a community. So I really think that was one of the first times I learned that lesson of, you can be very prepared, but at a certain point, just be yourself and the right people will find you, the right job will find you. And I kind of dislike, I didn't count myself for this job because I was like, there's no way that they're not going to think that I'm the right fit, or I don't feel as knowledgeable about the team. And it turned out that I was exactly what they were looking for. And a week later, they called me and they were like, yeah, we looked through all the applicants and you got the job. So
wow,
fly down to Florida, we can start shooting you for spring training. So
that's insane.
Yeah, it was definitely a whirlwind. And it goes back to what I was saying of, you know, I had the preparation of having been a performer and being able to memorize lines. But then there was a certain point where it was opportunity, where a lot of things had to line up. And you think about that, where, you know, if my brother didn't, I take it all the way back to that. I'm like, if my brother didn't go on that school field trip in elementary school, would my career be where it is today? So
the butterfly effect.
Just things aligning. Yeah. And a lot of that is out of your control, because that was very much out of my control. So there is a sense of what's meant to be is meant to be, because it just felt like all of the cards lined up in the right way.
That's so beautiful, because I feel like it also reminds me of, you know, if you never try, you'll never know. So just go for it. I mean, what's there? There's nothing to lose, right? And it's so true. I think a lot of us do suffer from imposter syndrome and then end up not using the opportunities that are right in front of us. So I think your story is such a great example of that. If you never try, you'll never know. Just go for it. Honestly, just go for it and be yourself. I think that is also such a beautiful part, that just be yourself. That's what's going to get you your job, not by putting a mask on your face.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there were definitely a lot of lessons from my very first experience that I still carry with me. Even
I'd love to chat about.
There's a lot of like hard parts to this industry too, and a lot of it is out of your control. So I do oftentimes think back on that and say, that was very much, if it was meant to be, it's meant to be situation. And I do carry that with me still.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you had to go down to Florida, and I'm guessing this was during college. So as someone who was dabbling in both a career and college, how did you kind of balance the two and continue to build your portfolio to get to where you are today?
Yeah, it was definitely hard. It was a balance. So I actually switched colleges because of this job, because a lot of it required during the season to be out at the ballpark. So I actually went to school. I went to Temple University in Philadelphia my freshman year. And then I booked this job my winter break between freshman year. So after that, I decided to, it's just better to go to a school closer to home, closer to New York. So it's easier for me to travel back and forth for the team. So I ended up transferring to Hofstra University on Long Island. And I mean, that was a big change too, because I was, you know, switching, I was leaving my friends, I was leaving this bigger university for a more private school or a more private college. And there was an adjustment period. So I was in between juggling this new job and then juggling just normal 18, 19 year old girl things of like, switching colleges, like making friends, fitting into school, like trying to juggle grades and all of this stuff while feeling like I had this very full-time professional job. And I'm like trying to think back on like what, like at that time, I think I just had to be really diligent about my time and my schedule. And I think it taught me to, it matured me a little bit faster than it probably would have if I didn't have that job. Yep. So I felt like I had to be a little bit more responsible because I had this professional job that I had to keep up, and also a public image in a certain sense too. So there was a lot that I think maybe fueled a little bit of anxiety in me too, if I'm going to be honest, because I was thinking in terms of, I can't just make mistakes like a regular kid. I feel like I have this job that's on the line, and I have this image now that's on the line. And I think a lot of it was more so in my head, and I really did overthink it, but yeah, it did. And then from there, I always had this mindset in college of, I need to now be thinking about the next thing. Cause I never thought that this would be a guaranteed gig and I would be working in it as long as I did. I just thought it was this one season thing and I wanted to keep up this momentum. So it did create this almost like very like perfectionist mentality, overachieving, career first, which I look back on and I think I would have probably given myself a little bit more grace because I was very hard on myself during that time. But yeah, it was hard. I can't say that it was like easy by any means, but you find a way to do it. And if it's something that you're passionate about, I was very passionate about it. I made it work, a lot of long hours, yeah, not a lot of sleep during that time, but who's sleeping in college anyways, you know?
Yeah. That reminded me of another episode I did with Sangeeta Patel, who used to be the host at ET Canada. And she said something very similar where she was actually studying electrical engineering. So something totally different from broadcast journalism, right? And she would do this. She would be passionate about storytelling and she'd be doing things with her school, her organization. So she said the same. It was just like, I was barely sleeping. But when I look back, it was totally worth it because anyway, who is in college?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I remember at that time I had the Mets job. I was, you know, full-time in school. I was also doing the college news at the same time. And then I had a part-time job.
Oh my gosh.
At a computer center. And then I was also an RA. So I think back on that and I'm like, I think things are hard now. Like, actually, I was like, let me take a step back because remember what I was doing, everything I was juggling in college.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Were you working all through? Like, did you have the Mets job all through the 4 years of college?
So I had it the first 3 years and then I didn't have it my senior year. So the way that it filmed was we would shoot spring training in February and then it would go through the season I think I shot my last episode a little bit before the season ended. So it would probably be September. So I think early September, I would be done. So there was that half year where I didn't have the job or it would be the off season. And then my senior year, we filmed the last one and then the show, they switched it over to, they just kind of canceled the show. And then it went being a digital show and they had someone do a voiceover instead. Okay. So I got the axe. I'll be honest, I was scared because I was like, I was relying on this for the longest time. And it was at this very pivotal time of my senior year of college where you're thinking, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
And that happened at the very beginning of my senior year. And I was like, I don't know what's going to happen now. But I was thankful that I still had a lot of footage from what I had done the past 3 years and then doing the school news and then just doing different things like outside of that as well that I could build up my hosting reel. So my plan was to hopefully after I graduated, start sending these reels out to local news. And my plan was I'll do local news. And then from there, I'll go to a mid-market and then I'd go to a bigger market. And then I would eventually be on Good Morning America. And clearly, you know, you plan out one way and then God and the universe take you on a whole path.
That's insane. So how did you go from sports to being now entertainment queen?
So entertainment queen, I love that. I ended up doing sport. I ended up being with the Mets for 7 years total because I had that gap year in 2015. So my senior year. And then I built up my reel. I started sending it out to a ton of different places and I ended up getting an agent out of that. But between then is when I started producing. So I was like, you know what? I need a job. I'm going to see what my skill sets, how it can transfer over to other jobs in media. So I ended up getting a producing position at GMA, which was very crazy because that was always my end goal was to, you know, be a reporter on Good Morning America and be the next Robin Roberts. But I landed a producing job there instead. And I was like, you know what, this is great. Like, this is a great first step. Like I ended up being an associate producer. So they were really looking for people to do overnight producing. And I guess not a lot of people wanted that position. So I went straight from my very first position was an associate producer, which, you know, usually takes some time to build up to that. So I was very thankful and grateful for that. But in between doing that, which is very long hours, very tough hours because it was 3 a.m. to 11 a.m. on
No
weekends.
way. Oh my God.
So I basically just gave up my early 20s to try just not having any weekends or not having a social life. And then in between that time, I had booked an agent, or I landed an agent. And the very first job that he sent me out on was, he said, you know, the Mets are actually looking for a host, not for their network, but actually one of their hosts to do live hosting for during the games. So it was a lot of my skill level and my skill set that I already had, but very different ball game, like no pun intended, but it was fast pace. A lot, there's nothing crazier than live production.
Right.
So they had an opening for that. And luckily, when I went in for the audition, I knew a lot of the people that were there. It was a lot of familiar faces, and I never worked directly with them, but I would always see them in passing when I was working for the network. So again, it just felt like fate. And I booked that job, and I was there for another 4 years.
Wow.
So in total, yeah, I was with the Mets from 2012 to 2019.
Wow. Okay, that's an incredible time. And I know you mentioned in the past that you wanted to eventually make that switch to entertainment. And now you've, I think in the last couple of years, had a lot of your firsts with first New York Fashion Week, first red carpets, first award seasons. Like, I think that's incredible. So congratulations again. Can you talk to us about how that transition kind of happened, and how did you go about getting all of these different positions?
Yeah, for sure. So after I was with the Mets for a little bit, I decided that it was time for a change. I had always thought about pop culture, and when I wanted to, you know, be on GMA, I wanted to be an entertainment reporter, and you know, I wanted to be on the red carpet, I wanted to be on E! News. There were all these other things that
Yeah.
I wanted to do. And so in addition to like being my Robin Roberts GMA, I wanted to be Maria Menounos on E! News, and that was a huge life goal of mine too. So when I made the decision to be a host, it was very much catered towards entertainment news, and I fell into sports and I ended up loving sports, but I knew that there was time for a change. So I eventually started auditioning, and I was doing side gigs while I was at the Met. So I also worked for Sports Illustrated. I also did some lifestyle hosting stuff for Google. And then I had booked a job with Billboard. So I started doing more music-based hosting. And then through that, The Hollywood Reporter is a sister company, or is a sister brand of Billboard's. So I made the right connections, and eventually I said my end goal was to work at The Hollywood Reporter. And I was like, I think this is the perfect gig. So eventually there was an opening for that position, so I auditioned for it and I got the job, which
Wow.
was kind of crazy. Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of other, and you know, there was a lot of other things that went into that too, where I felt like it was the right place, right time. And you know, where it'll be a long story, but there was definitely
I want
a lot of moments.
to know
Well, it was my friend at the time. She had booked a job. She was working at The Hollywood Reporter, and then she booked a job with People.
it. Okay.
And it was funny because I was exactly when I was like, I think I want to be at The Hollywood Reporter. There's not really an opening. And me and her had both auditioned for this job at People, and she got the job. And at the time, I was like, you know what? Like, I think like there's not an opening at The Hollywood Reporter. This job at People is something that I would really want. And I was so bummed when I didn't get it. And then I realized that it was my friend that got that job, which then was the perfect time. It had an opening for The Hollywood Reporter. So that was another moment where I was like, this thing that I thought that I wanted, I didn't get it because actually there was something better and more perfect for me aligned. And I didn't even realize because it was better than I could have even imagined. So she got to have her dream gig, and then I got to have mine. So
Love
it was
that.
definitely one of those, like, you know, everything aligned at the right time. So it took some patience, but so that's how I moved into entertainment. And I've been here for a while now. Like,
Yeah.
it's been a minute, but I've been able to grow within the company, which has been really nice. And I started out just doing their daily news videos, and then through time I started doing one-on-one interviews, And then eventually I got to do my first red carpet in 2021, which
Love
is
that. Oh
crazy.
my God.
Yeah. So I've been doing it for a few years and I love it. It's definitely a mix of everything that I've wanted. It's a mix of, a little bit of my live hosting skills by being on the red carpet, and then also, my knowledge of pop culture and being able to be with the talent one-on-one. So it's been really nice.
Who was your first celebrity on the red carpet?
The first celebrity on the red carpet. It's funny because he's now actually one of the people that I've interviewed the most. It's Paul Rudd.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
he was one of the very first people that I interviewed on the red carpet. And
Wow.
it was for the first Ghostbusters. And then full circle, I just did the second
Yeah.
Ghostbusters.
I just saw that.
Yeah.
What is it like? Do you have the nerves? Are you starstruck? Like, what are the emotions that you feel like?
There's definitely a lot of nerves. I think that's a misconception, is that the more you do it, I think people think that you don't get nervous anymore. I still get very nervous. There's
Yeah.
still, a little bit of performance anxiety that kicks in just
Yeah.
before, but then you see just how chaotic it is, and then just kind of like being in that moment, it's really thrilling. And I think that's kind of like a sign of if you can be in this industry or not. Like, can you thrive in that kind of environment? Because red carpets, it can be very crazy. There's a lot of moving parts. You can be interviewing one person, and then at the last minute, they could be like, actually, we gotta switch it up. You have to interview this person instead. You're kind of, grabbing PR people, seeing who you can get. It's very crazy, and it feels like it flies by like that. So it is like my very first one, I definitely felt very overwhelmed. And I think the more you do it, the more you can anticipate how it's going to be like. But I feel like the nerves,
Yeah.
if you're a performer, you know that nerves are always going to be part of it. But I think that kind of fuels you in a little bit too.
Absolutely. And have you ever had a moment where you've kind of, I guess, you've had to do the research, but you also have to be spontaneous in a role like this. How do you kind of set yourself up for success for something like that?
I really think it's just being a good listener at the end of the day. And I used to be really nervous about that too, because I'm a planner and I have to know, and a little bit of anxiety in me makes me want to know how everything's going to play out. So it's funny that I go into a job like interviewing where you really don't know where the conversation's going to go, but there's a little bit of fun in that too. And it really is just having a conversation, listening, and just seeing where it takes you, and not being afraid to, divert a little bit or stray from the plan. Because you have your questions, but at the end of the day, if they're talking about XYZ and that seems interesting to you, I think it's okay to
Yeah.
follow up, because at the end of the day, you want a natural conversation. And if you're interested, I guarantee you the audience is too. I think they're looking for a natural interaction too. So sometimes when it can feel a little stiff, the audience sees through that too,
Yeah.
which, everybody struggles with. And I struggle with it all the time too. I feel like I'm like, oh, you know what? They were saying that. I should have brought this up. And I think about it in hindsight. But you're learning. You learn as you go.
That's great. I love that this role is always a work in progress. And like you mentioned right in the beginning of our conversation, that it's all about storytelling. So if you're listening and you're continuing that conversation in the most natural way, that is the beauty of storytelling. So it's really about going back to that goal and that purpose of why you even got into broadcast journalism in the first place. So
Yeah.
it's very cool. Do you have any best practices, like when you go, not only just red carpets, but even interviews, best practices to kind of set yourself up for success? Is there things that you do, routines, or like things you read about that kind of, set you up when you are doing interviews?
Yeah, if I'm interviewing someone, I definitely will take a lot of time with research. I mean, this is,
Yeah.
it's pretty obvious, but I do a lot of research on the person and each interview subject that I'm doing. And I'll really take a lot of what I do is, actors and artists. So I really take a look at their filmography, their discography, and really look at what they've done in the past and what they have going on, what they have coming up, and if there's any way that I can call to the past or a favorite movie. Like, I always like if there's a fan favorite show or movie that the actor's been a part of, it's always nice to kind of do a callback moment. And then in terms of actually feeling prepared, I do like to write out my questions instead of typing them because I feel like it helps me remember it more. And then the more comfortable that I am with my questions, the more I am able to have a natural conversation because I know my questions like the back of my hand. So if I always need to go back to it and weave into it again in the conversation or weave it into the conversation, it'll feel natural and it'll feel comfortable to me because I'm so familiar with it that it doesn't feel like I'm, stumbling through my words or I need to look at my cards to see what the questions are. So yeah, I feel like I always write my questions out.
I'm so glad you brought in handwriting out here because I feel like it's so underrated now. I'm the same way. I need to write everything I do. If I don't, it just doesn't register. It doesn't feel real. Like I cannot like type it out. Of course it's there, but I need to write it out as well, even if it's extra work.
Yeah, I do a lot of like handwriting just in general. I'm more of like a pen to paper kind of person, which is funny. I have the worst handwriting that I have ever in my entire life. Like no one can read what I'm
That's
writing.
amazing. Your secrets are with
Yeah.
you.
So even if someone looked at my cards, there's no way they would even be able to say like see what I'm writing or what I wrote because it's that illegible.
That's so funny. I have so many journals and just every journal has a different thing. And it's really funny. So I love that you brought it up. Talking about celebrities and celebrity moments, can you talk to me about, you don't have to name names if you don't want to, but what was your like first, like not first, but just overall favorite celebrity moment and your worst celebrity moment?
Oh, I know. I knew you were going to ask me this. And I was like, worst celebrity moment. I would, they have me on an NDA. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think I've had any that like, I think at the time I was like, this was really bad. I think now when I think back on it, I'm like, ugh, I think there's been so many, I'm going to be honest, there's been multiple occasions where I've been disappointed by someone that I've interacted with. It's not even necessarily a specific interview that I've done, but being on these carpets, being at a lot of these events too, you run into a lot of people, even if you're not interviewing them. So I feel like a lot of times I've had maybe poor interactions with celebrities. I remember there was one person that I interacted with. I won't say obviously who it
That's okay.
was, but I was doing an interview with them, and I don't think they realized that I was in the room at the time. And they it was through Zoom. So I don't know if they realized that I was in the Zoom already. And they were just making some comments that I felt were not the best. So that definitely shook me a little bit. And I mean, we still have the raw footage and it was in there. So I was like, we could have done them dirty, but we didn't.
Oh
I was not happy. And I was like, because at first I was like, did that actually happen? Or am I just like hypersensitive
no.
to like maybe like someone maybe critiquing me? And then it was in there. And me and my editor, we talked about it. We're like, did they really say that? And I was like, yeah, I think they did.
Oh my
So
gosh.
that definitely did change my perception of that person. But it's what's sad is that, I'm not the first reporter or journalist that has run into that. And I'm not someone, this isn't even the worst thing that's happened to someone. So it is tough because a lot of times you're like, don't meet your idols. And there is a part of me that's, scared to meet some people that I actually look up to because you never know what that interaction is going to be like. And at the end of the day, like, I'm still a fan of people too, just because I interview people a lot doesn't mean that I won't ever get starstruck. So there is like a level of nerves there where I'm like, are they going to like meet my expectations? Because in my mind, they are perfect. And will they live up to that? But yeah, so that was a not so great one. But on the flip side, I've had many, many interactions like that outweigh the bad that were really great conversations and really great interactions that I've had. My favorite interview, it wasn't even someone that I interviewed. I actually produced it. and it was through Zoom, but it was still hands down my favorite interaction. It was Elton John and Stevie Wonder together on a Zoom call. And I had produced, one of my colleagues at Billboard had done the interview. And at one point, you know, Elton and Stevie are talking together, and Stevie's by his piano, and he decides that he just wants to do a cover of one of Elton's songs. So he just plays a song and he does a little rendition of it. I'm like, I just had a personal Stevie Wonder concert.
That's
so
insane.
I feel really, yeah. And I was sitting there, and that was my favorite probably celebrity interaction. And it was like the most starstruck, I think, that I have been. And
wow,
it wasn't even something that I did as an interview. And that still stands out as like one of my favorite memories of working in this industry. So it's times like this where you realize, you know, how lucky, how far I've come, how grateful I am to be doing what I'm doing. And, mm-hmm. you know, I like to write those memories down. So if I have a good interaction, or if I have a good day at an event or on the job, I'll write it down, because it is a roller coaster. You can have a lot of high highs and a lot of low lows. So I really try to stick on to the good moments,
yeah.
and reflect on it, especially when I'm feeling really down about, you know, where my career is headed, or just feeling low about the job in general.
Yeah, that's, oh my, first of all, you witnessed two legends. That's incredible. That is insane. Yeah. I'm low-key, I'm envious, I'll say. Let's just give it a positive connotation here.
Yeah. Well, I was envious that I wasn't in the room. Like none of us were in the room, but I was like, I'm sad that this isn't in person, because
yeah.
also I don't even know if I would be able to function, because
yeah.
I was so thankful that it was on Zoom, because I just kept like hyperventilating. And I was like, hey, God, I'm like, my camera's turned off. I'm on mute right now because I'm freaking out.
I can imagine, but that's such a good point you brought up about writing down the good moments, because I think we overlook the good moments so many times, and we're always like bogged down by the day to day and like what's next and what's going to happen in our careers. So just kind of looking back and reflecting on all the amazing things you've accomplished is so important to kind of keep your head in the game and keep you going forward. So, yeah. Speaking of, you know, writing all the good moments and really having that pen to paper moment, let's talk about going back to education. What does someone do who has not studied broadcast journalism but still wants to get into this industry? How do they kind of pave a path for themselves as a TV host, producer, and writer?
Well, I think what's crazy now is that the industry is really changing. So a lot of people that are going into hosting don't necessarily have a background in it. And I know now with social media, with TikTok, everything's really taking off in a different direction, which can be a good thing. If you never studied broadcast journalism, I think it's about putting your work out there into the world. And I know so many people that have had a successful now hosting career just because they have put their work out there. And I've said this for a while now, even back when it was just Instagram, like, put your stuff out there, get out there on the streets and start interviewing people, just showcase your talent. Get into hosting workshops. So, you know, you can get into a hosting workshop, whether you have a degree in journalism or you don't. So a lot of those, and there's a ton of them in New York, LA, like any major city should have hosting classes. So get into hosting classes, just keep learning, keep growing, and just willing to take feedback on how you can improve your skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then it's just a matter of, be on TikTok, put yourself out there, put your work out there, grow your social platforms, all of that, all of those things are going to help you then get your stuff in front of the right eyes. And then I feel like these days getting that job or getting that gig is just like one post away, one viral moment away.
Yeah.
A lot of people are really utilizing social media and platforms like TikTok and Instagram to, you know, to grow their careers and further their careers. And we're seeing a lot of, we're seeing a lot of great outcome from that. So I don't think it matters if you have a degree. I think a degree in that helps for sure. But especially if you're someone that, you know, got a degree in engineering or got a degree in something else and want to make that shift. I know so many people that have started out as one thing and are now having such fruitful, successful careers in journalism, in media, just because, you know, they have the right networks, they're putting their work out there, and it's paying off.
Yeah. And do you think that apart from social media, is it important to have an agent or representation even now?
I think this might be a little controversial, but I think these days, not so much. So I actually don't have an agent right now. Okay. And I think back in the day, I probably would have felt really anxious about the fact that I don't have an agent, so I'm not going to be able to continue to grow. But at this point, I feel like I have a lot of the right people in my corner. I have the right connections. I do have, you know, a way of networking in. I have my social platform. And I just feel like it's about building your connections from there. So I also just feel like being a master networker in a way can be like a way into being successful in this career too. But there is, you know, sometimes the big jobs, you don't hear about it unless it's behind, you know, an agent that would know about it. So there is something to be said about having representation, but I think especially if you're starting out, you don't need it.
Okay. So it's the DIY era almost.
Yeah, I think now, because there's a way for you to showcase your work. There's a way for people to see your work. I think, you know, of course, like you were able to have your website and have your, you know, your media on there. But now, especially with TikTok, the whole thing is, the whole purpose of that is to go viral. You're not looking at your friends' content on TikTok as much as you are on your For You page, where you're just constantly discovering. So that, I feel like, is the perfect platform if you want to be discovered.
That's a really, really good point. I feel like I'm so passionate about this topic. We will go on talking about it and I won't stop with my questions. But I know we have a podcast recording. So I want to know, what's next for you?
Oh, gosh. What's next for me? You know, I feel like I'm still in a period where I feel like my goals change every year. And I feel like I've had this mentality recently where I'm not necessarily thinking of the next big goal. I have more shorter goals. And I feel like at this point in my life, I found myself being more successful when I've had little goals smaller goals that I've set for myself, or not even, they're not little goals. They're definitely, you know, high achieving goals. But when I look at it as more of a bucket list item, I feel like it's more attainable. So when I was starting out in my career, my bucket list item, or like my goal wasn't immediately, you know, be on E! News, be like Maria Menounos. My goal was build my hosting reel. Once I built my hosting reel, I was laser focused on getting an agent. After I got an agent, laser focused on just being sent out on auditions, not even booking something. So I feel like I've always approached it like that. So, you know, now I have, you know, once I landed this job, I feel like I've just been like, I want to work my first red carpet. I want to work my first award show. I want to do this, do that. I have, you know, a lot of goals. I would love to work Sundance or Toronto. I would love to do a film festival. I would love to do the Oscars. I would love to do the Met Gala. So there's a lot of little goals that I have that I haven't yet accomplished in this job before I feel like, am I ready to move on to the next thing? And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I could see it somewhat being in media, whether it's, you know, hosting my own thing. Maybe it's starting a podcast, or I love writing, maybe doing something more with writing or scripted. There's a lot of goals, but right now I think there's more that I want to do in the position that I'm doing now.
I love that you said that. And it's also so interesting to see that, you know, when people have a bigger goal, it's about how can you have bite-sized goals for yourself and kind of climb the ladder. And seeing your career trajectory, I have no doubt that all of these small goals that you mentioned are like just a little bit away. I know that it's all coming and we're going to see it on your social media one more time. You've been doing such a fantastic job of representing even the South Asian community on the red carpet. So I just want to like clap because it is commendable. It's truly amazing.
Thank you so much. And it really is like, I love, you know, all, and I really appreciate like all of the feedback that I have been getting, because a lot of it is like, and I know it's cliche, but it's like, you don't see that representation as much. And I remember seeing some of those, like Sangeeta Patel, and mm-hmm. even like seeing someone like Mindy Kaling, and yeah. seeing people like really excelling at their jobs and really admiring them. And I feel really honored that now I'm, you know, somewhat on the other side. I still have those goals that I want to accomplish, but even being able to give back and having a community now, which is so great, is that I feel like the community is like very strong, or a lot stronger than it was before. Cause now we're seeing that there are so many other people that want to be doing this. And we just didn't know about it because we felt a little bit isolated in our own corners. Yes. So doing things like this really help, because it helps strengthen and build that community and helping each other and like seeing each other win, which I think at the end of the day is like what we all want, is to like make it more normalized that, yeah, like there is a South Asian woman that's in entertainment hosting, or that's in acting, or is in media and producing and directing, and it's the norm, and we're all going to be helping each other grow, and that's what we want to see for the future.
Oh, that's so well said. And it's so true. We're not only building the community for ourselves, but we're also building the community for young brown girls and brown boys who want to be doing this or even remotely interested. And people like you are inspiring the youth. So thank you once again. And talking about the youth, I guess, what is one piece of advice that you would give to yourself if you could go back in time?
A piece of advice? I'm trying to think. I think it goes hand in hand with, when I talk about smaller goals, I think I was very, like I mentioned in college, I was very laser focused. I was very career oriented. I think I would give myself a lot more grace for everything that I was doing and accomplishing. And I think it might also just be a first generation mentality, where we feel like we need to strive to be successful and be the best of the best because we were given this amazing opportunity and we don't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
So anything that we do, we want to give it our all, and we're perfectionists. But I don't know if I necessarily sat in my blessing while I was in the blessing. I was constantly just looking towards the next thing. And as soon as I got my bucket list item, I would just cross it off and on to the next. Wow. And rather just than just sitting there and feeling it and being grateful. And there's this quote actually that I always like look back on, and it's like, don't forget that you're sitting in your, I'm gonna butcher this, but never forget that you're sitting in your current answered prayer while you're waiting for your next one.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we kind of forget about all the blessings that we have and all of the, you know, things that we have accomplished in our lives, whether it be our career, whether it be in our personal lives, whether it be, you know, with our family, with our friends. Don't forget like all of the things that like you wished for and you now have, while you're still waiting for that next prayer, while you're still waiting for that next blessing. And I really try to practice that now. And I think that's why I feel a lot of, you know, I feel a lot of peace with my career and where my career is headed. I used to have a lot of career anxiety, and I really wanted to have, especially my 30s, I just turned 30 last year. So it was really a lot of reflection on finding balance and like, it's okay. Like I'm doing great, and I should be able to celebrate that. I should be able to feel so proud of myself and just be so grateful for where I'm at right now. And I truly, once I started actively reflecting on that, I felt so much more peace. So I think that's the advice that I would give my younger self, or maybe younger, you know, people that are watching right now. And it's hard, you live and you learn too. Yeah. So I think you have to get to a certain place in your life to be able to come to that realization. But yeah, I think there would have been a lot more peace in my life had I known that earlier.
But now we know, and I know I fully agree with you. It's so hard to implement it, but you said it so beautifully, and I cannot agree more. But, you know, as we're talking about the youth, let's kind of look forward. What would you say are the three ingredients that would fill your cup of success as you move forward?
Yeah, I would say it's knowing your purpose and knowing your why, because as long as you have that, and knowing why you're doing what you're doing, it kind of helps you like go through the roller coaster of the ups and downs of this career. And it kind of like helps you cut through the bullshit, because you're just always focusing on why I'm doing this. And it kind of makes a lot of the downsides more bearable because you're always focusing on this is the reason why I'm doing it. And as long as you always come back to the reason why you are passionate about this thing that you want, that will always set you up for success.
Yep.
The second thing would be patience, because as we know, it's a long game. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So having a lot of patience for, you know, knowing that your time will come and celebrating little wins. And even, you know, if it's taking a while, I think having a lot of patience for this career goes a long way. And then third, I would say having a really good support system. So it brings it all the way back to what I said in the beginning, whether, you know, a lot of times we look as our support system, as our parents, as our family, but really looking for your support system in all aspects, like whether it's a mentor that you have, whether it's friends that you have, because this line of work can be very grueling. It can be very taxing and even hurtful at times. Like, you know, I think an aspect that we didn't really touch on about hosting, but one of the hardest parts for me was the feedback and kind of opening yourself up if you are a public figure to negative feedback, to trolls, to nasty comments, hurtful comments. And a lot of that really affected me for a really long time. And I wouldn't be, you know, I'd be lying if I said it still didn't, but maybe not to the same degree. But having that support system and having those people there to pick you up when you don't get the job, when you get that rejection, when you get that hurtful comment, or when you're just feeling overall low about yourself, like you need good people in your corner, or else it's so easy to get lost in this career or feel burnt out and just kind of give up. So yeah, I think all of those things go beyond just this career. I think it goes for anything that you're doing, you know, just life in general. It's having those people in your corner.
Oh, that's so true. And I think we talk a lot about this in my other episodes where it's about cut out the noise, surround yourself with cheerleaders. And I think that's so important. So thank you so much. This has been a fantastic episode. I really appreciate all the advice and all the transparency you've had with us on this episode. I'm sure our audience is starstruck, loving the moment that you've shared with us. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for being on this episode.
No, honestly, Ritika, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. It's nice to, you know, be able to reflect on how far I've come and how far we all still have to go. So,
yeah, I know. I love that. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit the follow button on all your favorite streaming platforms. Go follow us on social media at Chai with Champs and share with your friends and family. We'll be back every other Monday at 6 p.m. CT.